to AWARE. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon. Welcome to the AWARE Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Just had one of those moments where I had glasses on my eyes and glasses on my head. I was trying to figure out what just happened. I'm all right. Okay. So I have been a big fan of my next guest for a long time. And if you have not heard of best-selling author Sark, then you're going to absolutely love this conversation today. We're going to have a little bit of a coffee talk right now. We're going to have a talk with a woman who I have admired for so long for her courage and for her wisdom. She's written books like Succulent Wild Woman, Bodacious Book of Succulents, Eat Mangoes Naked, and a wonderful, wonderfully colorful writer, because all of her books are written in full color and kind of handwritten in within their text, and so beautiful. The artwork is so beautiful. And I mean, what I really love about Sark's work is that she gives us permission to have sucky days, to have great days, and to just live in the middle of all of that as well, which is what most of us really do most of the time. So welcome to the show, Sark. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks so much, Lisa. It's so good to be here, and I love what you said. Yeah, you know, my new book, Glad No Matter What, is all about that, what I call the marvelous messy middle, and I also call it practical gladness.
I love that. It's pretty much where we live all the time, probably 80% of the time.
Well, actually, I would offer a different view. I think a lot of people live in what I call the extremes.
Oh.
So they are either extremely happy or they're extremely upset.
Mm.
And they're not necessarily living in the middle.
And
so that's why I wrote about it, the subject of transformation and change, so that people don't have to stay in repetitive negative stories where a lot of people are living.
Well, yeah, and that, I mean, in my experience, I'll just say it, talk from my personal experience, but I'm either in just exhaustion and low lows, or striving for that goal and high highs, and then that happens, you know, on either side of most of my day, which happens in the middle of, all right, going to drop the kid off to school, making the lunch, doing the going to the gym, doing my research.
Right, and so let's embrace the marvelous messy middle instead of trying to cling to one side, or, you know, especially slanting towards the side of always wanting to feel good, because then we feel disappointed when we don't feel good.
Right, or I add a little judgment of being in the middle because I'm thinking, oh, no, I should be doing more. And not be totally okay with making the lunch, driving the great drive to school, and going to the gym and doing all that great stuff.
Exactly. And that I want to be sure that everyone hears, you know, I wrote this book called Glad No Matter What, Transforming Loss and Change into Gift and Opportunity. And I want to make sure everyone hears right away that this is not about feeling glad when you don't. How annoying.
It's
about finding the glad parts in as many feelings as you can, and what you just described, because you can find in those, you know, driving to school and making the sandwiches, whatever it is, you can find those glad moments all along the way in tiny increments.
In tiny increments, yes, absolutely. I have to ask you, the cover of your book is so beautiful. There's this giant labyrinth over a cliff. Is that your front yard?
Yeah, let's have. I want to do a contest. Like, where do you imagine Sark lives? Like, what's it like there? Like, there's a giant labyrinth and the ocean behind.
My God, gorgeous! It's so pretty.
It actually has a really neat story. I have a new publisher. They're called New World Library, and they're fabulous, and they're in California.
Uh-huh.
And I said to them, "Let's have a 3-minute meeting about the new book cover." And they said, great. I said, be on the phone, and I bet we can be off the phone within 3 minutes.
Okay.
I always think that meetings just take too long.
Yeah, they do.
And so they all got on the phone, and there I was, and I said, okay, I have a vision. I said, I'm wearing a purple sparkly cape. I'm standing in the center of a labyrinth that's on the edge of the ocean. I have my arms outstretched, and then it says, glad no matter what, above that.
That's exactly
what. And they're like, good, we love it, let's do it. And I said, that was 2 minutes, 20 seconds, we're out.
Okay, because I'm
the editor, and the editor and the art director and I hiked out to the labyrinth. It's about a 2 mile thing, and on one of the coldest days in San Francisco, and we had a period of grace for an hour where the wind slowed down enough to get that shot that you're looking at.
Oh, so this is an actual place.
Oh, yeah.
It is beautiful. Wow. We just have to pick up her. If you guys go to planetsark.com, you'll see the front cover of her book. And also you'll get an idea of who Sark is from her website. There's so many wonderful transformational gems on your website, which is so great. So let me just ask, first of all, for people who don't know your name, Sark, S-A-R-K, where does that come from?
Well, I think you ought to guess what they stand for, Lisa.
I should?
Yeah.
Okay. Succulent, adventurous, radical, and kind woman.
You get such a prize.
Kind of works.
Because I like to tell people when I ask kids that, they do what you just did. They just jump in. They say, you know, slippery alligator, rambling crunch. You know, and adults start second, oh, I wouldn't have any idea. Oh, I wouldn't know. And I'm like, well, it's just a guess. You know?
Great, okay.
So some might say it stands for simple acts of random kindness, which it does.
Oh, yeah.
But no, it stands for Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy.
And how would that just happen to have been your initials?
Well, no, I was born in Minneapolis, Minnesota as Susan Kennedy, and I had a paper mentor. That's what I call people who mentor you through the pages of books.
Oh.
So I had a paper mentor named Henry Miller who became quite famous for books like Tropic of Cancer and Capricorn, and his books were banned.
Wow.
He became a paper mentor of mine, and I read everything that he wrote, and he wrote what I call his avatar material, Stand Still Like the Hummingbird, Wisdom of the Heart, books like that.
Wow.
And I didn't know it, but he died, and he started appearing in my dreams.
Oh, my goodness.
He came into my dream and he said, your name will be Sark and your artwork will be famous before your writing. And I thought, well, that's a dumb name. I don't want to be that name. And I wrote the dream down in my journal and put it aside. And he came back 2 weeks later in another dream and said, your name will be Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy. And I thought, oh, that's so pretty. I'm going to make it legal and change it. So I went to court, and then I was doodling on a piece of paper and realized that it's spelled Sark.
Oh, so it really did have a whole journey to it. You have written about your dreams in the past, haven't you?
I have. I've written about my life. I'm just a giant human experiment. I mean, all my books are filled with my stories of what has worked and what has failed and what are my flaws and what are my strengths. And I've shared so much of my life in my books. I have 16 books, and I'm so happy to do that and continue to do it. Everything and Glad No Matter What are all things that I'm experiencing and practicing with myself.
Well, I have to say that I absolutely admire your courage. Your experience as a child was very, very, very traumatic. And if you wouldn't mind sharing that with some of my listeners
Oh, no, I don't mind at all. I speak very openly.
You do.
I have no shame. And
you're so open.
Well, I'm so happy I've had so much healing and so much therapy and so much forgiveness and so much transformation, really. Yes, I was abused by an older brother for 7 years, sexually and physically, and it was, you know, the worst thing that could possibly happen. And however, there were gifts from that incest, and the gifts were that I moved into my imagination and lived there. Now, I don't recommend this as a route.
Right, yeah.
But I'm just telling you that I began dreaming of the books that I would create. I lived in a world other than the one I was, you know, actually living in.
Mm-hmm.
And I made friends with a man in the neighborhood who became another mentor of mine. He was 80 years old when I met him, and I was 10.
Wow.
And he became my best friend, and he became my refuge. And I didn't realize it, but transformation was occurring through this man. His name was Mr. Boggs. And he really took such a great, well, he just loved me. And he wanted to teach me to look close, so he bought me a microscope, and to look far, so he bought me a telescope. And then he got very sick, and he went in the hospital. And my mother said, you need to understand that Mr. Boggs is probably not going to come back.
Mm.
And I said, well, then I need to create something for every day he's in that hospital.
Wow.
And I did that. And
at 10?
Yes.
Wow.
And he did get out. And he said, I think you saved my life. He said, no one else called or wrote while I was in there.
Aww.
He said, I had to get out to see you.
And you probably did save his life. You gave him something to live for.
And then what he really did was awakened a dream in me. I immediately mm-hmm. ran in the house and said, Mom, I'm supposed to be a beacon of hope and write books for the world. And then she said, eat your peanut butter sandwich. But that first book was written in the summer of my 10th year. And then I was not published till I was 35. So I have a lot to say. I've learned a lot about procrastination and perfectionism. And
well, you've been through a lot. I mean, you had a huge healing journey to go through to be essentially what you did with Mr. Boggs. Is that his name?
Yes.
You did have been doing ever since.
Yes, exactly.
With your books and your transformational wisdom and so forth that you put out in such a playful way, that same exact thing for all of us. They get the opportunity to come across your work. So wait, your first book at 10, what was that about?
It was called Mice from Mars. And it was, I am happy to say that the art in it does not look very different than the art I do today.
Oh, great, great.
That's a tribute. it was a thinly disguised abuse story. It was a mouse that came to Earth from Mars and didn't understand buses and trucks, and it was running around almost being crushed everywhere. And I still have it, and perhaps one day I'll publish it. I've written two other children's books that I'll probably publish. But, yeah.
Wow.
And then I went silent. I wasn't published again until I was 35.
No doubt that's when your healing journey, though, began.
Oh, yes. Began and continued and continues to this day.
What did you do to get over that type of those types of events in your life? Obviously, you still live with them, but in a different relationship, yes?
Yes. I think that's when really the transformation and what I call the alchemy, you know, the opportunity for alchemy is there for everything. And that's really the other reason I wrote Glad No Matter What, because you know, as we know, it's not what happens to us, but it's what we do with what happens to us. And certainly, you know, an experience like incest, it did take a long time to alchemize and to find the gifts in it and to participate in a healing journey, with, you know, as you mentioned, and a forgiveness journey, which, by the way, does not happen like a ladder. This is why I won't ever write a book that says 10 steps.
Oh, because you go up and down, up and down, up and down.
It's a spiral. You know, it's a spiral, and you go around and you find yourself farther on the spiral, but in a different place. You know, it is just not a ladder.
Is it like the stages of grief where you go in and out of them?
Exactly, and the stages of grief, as wonderful as they were never presented in the nonlinear way that they were meant to be. So, meaning, people are saying, stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, and they think, I'm starting here in denial. Oh, good, I'm in acceptance. That means soon I'll be in, I'm out of bargaining already. Good. And then they think they're getting to the end to acceptance, and then they're over it.
No.
Often it means you're starting all over again, and you're angry a month later after you thought you were over it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I never have seen them numbered, but you're right. It is presented that way. And so your experience with your parents, how did you get to that place of forgiveness with them?
Well, I actually confronted the whole family, and I was fortunate, and my brother admitted that he had done it, and he said, yeah, I'm really sorry, and that was terrible, but you're crazy, and you should get over it. Mm. And of course, I said, well, actually, that's, you know, a horrifying thing to say, and you're not going to be allowed to speak any further. And my parents, you know, they were wonderfully, actually initially wonderfully supportive, and then as is common in households that have had incest, they backpedaled, and they tried to say that I should just get over it. This is always, by the way, the idea that time alone heals things is another misnomer. You know, people are constantly waiting. Well, if I wait enough time, I'll get over it. And time alone, without any transformational practices, it will basically leave the vibration right where you left it.
Oh.
So, for example, my mother never got along with her sister, and they had terrible fights. And I said, Mom, why don't you work this out before you both die?
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, I'm just waiting for enough time to pass. I said, Mom, you're 79. You know, do you think it's helped? Do you think it's worked?
Yeah.
She said, well, now that you pointed out, no, I don't think it has. And she said, as a matter of fact, I think it's gotten worse. And so she died without reconciling with her sister.
Oh, she did. Wow.
Oh, yeah. And this is common. And then it goes through the generations this way.
Well, you know, sometimes people would rather die than confront that past because the whole goal is for it to go away.
Right. And it's so hilarious that we think it goes away just because we die.
Right.
I mean, the energy lives on. I mean, now her sister is still alive, and I don't really communicate with her sister, even though I've forgiven her. She's a challenging person, and I don't care to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the forgiveness process. So back to that, when I wrote my first book, A Creative Companion, my therapist said at the time said, wow, this book is such a classic. He said, I would love to see your next book include the incest. And I was like, there is no way I'm writing about that, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'm so funny, I'm so dominant resistant even to myself. You know, as soon as I said that, then the next thing I had to do was write about it,
yeah, yeah.
So I wrote a book called Inspiration Sandwich,
uh-huh.
And I wrote a section called Transforming Negatives. And I called my parents to tell them that I had written this, not to ask them, but to tell them.
Okay.
And my mother said, good for you. You write about what happened to you. And I didn't expect that, and it turned out that she had her own abuse history that she had held in for 50 years and never told anyone.
It usually doesn't start and end with just one case.
No.
It almost never does.
She, yeah. Yes. And then my father said, well, why can't you just wait till we're dead? And to which I said, well, why don't you just die then? Because apparently I'm not supposed to live my life until you're dead.
Mm.
And I'm happy to say he didn't die then. But
that's good, yeah.
I was just very angry. But the point is, it went on to heal our family system because they didn't used to be able to say the word incest. It progressed to this, Lisa. I would call sometimes and my mother would say, I can't talk to you now. Kathy's here and she has a master's degree and we're having a fascinating discussion about incest. And
that's great.
And that is what it progressed to, you know.
Wow.
And when I told my mother at one point, you know, Mom, I just want to forgive you for not protecting me. And she said, well, I don't forgive you.
What?
So that was a whole nother opportunity to forgive her for that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
She was a tough customer.
Wait, how did she not forgive you?
Well, she thought that I had teased him, I had poked him, I had caused him to behave this way.
Wow.
And, you know.
I remember I heard one of your interviews, basically, that a therapist had told them that.
A therapist, yes. A therapist who let me sit on his lap and said, you have a very seductive little girl. I was 7 years old.
Yeah.
And I heard this through the door. He said, and you have a very seductive little girl, and any problems in this family are because of her.
Wow. And that imprinted you at that age?
It imprinted me, and it led to a suicide attempt in my mid-30s after a two-week episode of flashbacks to the incest.
Oh, wow.
And luckily, the suicide attempt was not successful, and I talked to the suicide prevention line, and they said, did you really want to die, or did you just want the pain to end? And I said, oh, I just want the pain to end. And so then they said, get yourself into therapy, which I did, which continued for the next about 15 years.
And what was the biggest effectiveness of the therapy? Was it talking? Was it being heard? Was it time? What worked?
It was a combination. That's a great question. It was a combination of things. I had what I would call a crisis therapist for the first year that just got me through that suicidal period.
Mm-hmm.
I then embarked on a 12-year process with someone who really scared me. I mean, someone that I knew was smarter than me and stronger than me and in many ways and was able to really mirror me. And he ultimately turned out to be the greatest healing participant because it was transpersonal. He was a former Buddhist monastic poet, and so everything... You know, I don't believe now in therapy that isn't transpersonal. So he was being healed as I was.
Oh.
So, you know, that's the reciprocal, that's the meaning of transpersonal, and it's powerful. You know, so it was also kinesthetic. I did a lot of Reiki and breath work. So there was a kinesthetic element. So there was talking. He also, 2 years into therapy, said, I'm going to take a big risk and I'm going to ask you not to speak about your parents anymore in this therapy.
Wow.
And I actually said to him, what are we going to talk about then?
And
that led me to write in my book, Transformation Soup, a chapter called My Mother's No Longer the Problem, Now What?
Oh, yes. I remember reading that book.
And that led to my complete forgiveness of my mother and the complete forgiveness of my father and ultimately the complete forgiveness of my brother, my older brother.
And in any way, I've always heard this, you need to forgive yourself. Did that ever come
up? Oh, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. That's still an ongoing process. I mean, you know, I think forgiveness of the self is the deepest, most primitive work that you can do.
It doesn't seem like, though, that would be a part of this because all of this was apparently done to you.
Well, absolutely, and especially the parts as a child, but certainly there were many things I did when I was not a child that were self-destructive and destructive to others.
I see. Uh-huh.
And, you know, sure. there was a lot of forgiveness of the self that was being called for.
So now you, and thank you so much for, again, your being open and talking about this, because you speak for a lot of people who look at you as an example of somebody who is, even as you're talking about your experiences that would just debilitate most people, you have an enthusiasm in your voice still. And an energy in your voice still that seems completely, I mean, in present time with everything, and you're okay. I mean, you're just in, I'm not saying you're completely 100% healed, because you never really get 100% healed from.
Oh, I am, Lisa. I am. No, I'm just teasing you.
Exactly. I was going to ask you then, what is
that? Well, I'll tell you, another one of my great mentors is Maya Angelou, the poet Maya Angelou.
Oh, church. Yes, I love her.
Well, when I went, and I was 16 years old when I found her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. And I couldn't imagine that anyone could be abused or molested and be as strong as and magnificent as she was.
Mm.
And that's when I really think I made the decision to become the role model that I was wanting, you know, and that I was finding in her and others. So I went to hear her at the public library, and I managed to go up there. And, you know, sibling incest is not as common, and it's not as spoken of either. And I managed to say, I think my brother molested me. And she just, I'll never forget it, she just reached out with her two hands and covered up one of my hands and looked me in the eyes and said, you are all right.
Wow.
You are all right.
You met her in person. My goodness.
She infused me with such a sense. I mean, I swear she changed the cells of my body. And years later, when I asked her for an endorsement for my book, Succulent Wild Woman, she called me back and left this message on my, at the time, answering machine and said, you know, this is Maya Angelou, and I'd be delighted to offer an endorsement for your book. And she said, we in this world, in this weary old world itself, have a great gaping need for Sark. Let's call for more and more Sark to fill every child's book bag and each attaché case.
Do you have that all over your walls in wallpaper? Because that is amazing.
Well, and then, you know, it was such an honor because then I wrote Transformation Soup that I just mentioned, the book where I said my mother is no longer the problem. And she called again to my to my request and said, this is Maya Angelou, and I've written a poem for your book. And she said, it goes like this. I'm head over hills and over the moon. No work of Sark can come too soon. I'm laughing out loud. That's what it took. I hope everybody will buy this book.
Wow.
And then there's another story, which is for another time, but I was on a national show with her in Canada, and it was me being mentored by her and what happened, and others being mentored by me and what happened. And
oh, my gosh.
That's another story. So.
Wow. We have time. We're here for another 40 minutes. I'm just, as I said, this is coffee talk today. We're definitely having just, okay, tea talk to some people that don't drink coffee.
Oh, good. But, yeah, because I don't.
Sorry, tea talk.
I like the smell of it, but I don't like to drink
okay.
It. Yeah, well, I can, you know, now that I've said that, I mean, I can say that, you know, it was a dream come true because it was the Canadian version of Oprah, so it was a big deal, and there was the dressing rooms, you know, Sark, Dr. Maya Angelou, and, you know, and I had an assistant, and she had an assistant, and then I was struck with sudden, complete shyness, you know, we all have, you know, let's take a moment right now to mention to everyone listening, we all have selves inside of us. We all have lots of different selves. We know we have inner children, but some people don't realize they have lots of selves. So these appear often as what could be called inner critics. And so we have, like, the brave one, and we have the shy one. You know, everybody has different names for the selves.
My friend calls it the committee.
Yeah.
In her head,
committee,
yes.
The uh-huh. team, the yeah. group. So my 13-year-old shy self showed up and just became completely deformed and incapable of meeting, you know, Dr. Angelou.
Wow.
And luckily my assistant ignored me and went over there and talked to her assistant, who was wearing a khaki suit and had a clipboard, and he seemed kind of officious. And she said, you know, Sark would like to meet Dr. Angelou, and I'm cringing over in the corner. And the next thing I hear is him say, Dr. Angelou, there's a Sark here to see you. And I thought, oh, no, that's just what I feared. You know, like, she's not going to know who this is, and it's so embarrassing. And she comes thundering out of the dressing room. Sark is here? Where's Sark? And she zeroes in on me. I don't even know who she guess she'd seen my picture. And she just swooped down on me. If you don't know it, she's well over 6 feet tall. And she stuffed me in her armpit. And so now I'm in her armpit, and she's rubbing the top of my head and saying, you smarty patootie, you smarty patootie. And I actually had a moment of panic. I'm like, I can't get out of her armpit. So we went out to do the most fabulous show. And
that is great. You know, I saw Oprah speak at the women's conference earlier this week. And if anyone has wants to catch it, I think you can still watch it online. It's the womensconference.org. And she spoke at the Minerva Awards. And she reminded me a lot of Maya Angelou. She had such a she was almost like Oprah the preacher.
Well, yeah, because – and, of course, Maya is her mentor, too.
Yes.
You know, her godmother, her mentor. And, yes, and how beautifully she's endowed herself with those lessons and with Maya's energy and her own energy.
She said something really great. She said what other people perceive as failures – and it was just something she was talking about where she had gotten criticism or something like that. And she says, and I'll make mistakes or what other people perceive as failures. And that was such a great, I caught it in the middle of a sentence she was saying. And what a great reframe on, what's, you know, as, you know, your past or hers and all of ours, what we could consider failures. They aren't. They're the perception of failures, but they're successes because your work, you know, what your past catapulted you to your work, and Oprah's catapulted her to her work. And I mean, it's just these types of things can be really changed and looked at for, as she said, using her voice to be a force for good.
Yep.
And you do the same. You have
exactly, and for all of us to be, and for everyone listening to know and realize and feel that they are that same transformational change agent. You know, we are not the things that we do. We are not the things that have happened to us, but we are the people that can reframe and recast and transform and alchemize every single situation. And I don't care what the circumstances are. I mean, you know, I've just been, you know, for this book, I interviewed hundreds of people, and we chose 11 people to go into the book, Portraits of Joy and Transformation. And I don't know if you've had a chance to read any, but they are so profound. And I am so blessed and changed by every opportunity I have. You know, let's give some recent stories from my life, because people will benefit from knowing, you know, the chance to. One of the things I write about in the book is a process I invented called three-part harmony, and it's a way to clear negative self-talk on a daily basis.
Oh, great. Let's go through that.
Yeah, and a lot of people live with this consistently, and it's very debilitating. And so it teaches you how to awaken and use your wise self, your positive, good energy self that's inside everybody. It's not just inside some people. And a few weeks ago, I was on my way to teach in British Columbia, and I was being picked up by a car and driver, and suddenly noticed that he was late. And I got, you know, oh, no, he's late. And I ran down the stairs and then remembered I hadn't taken out the garbage. So I ran down the service corridor of my building, and I slipped and fell.
Ooh.
And I slipped and fell in what turned out to be cat poop.
Oh, snap.
And so it was horrible. And I had to go change my clothes in a hurry. And I went out, and he was just pulling up and got out of the car and said, okay, ride to the airport. And I said, do you realize that you're late? And he said, I'm only 5 minutes late. I said, well, first of all, you're more than 10 minutes late, and second of all, you're defensive now. And I said, I'm not happy. He said, just get in the car.
Wow.
And I said, no, I will not get in the car. I said, I don't like you.
Good for you.
And he said, well, you know, we were at a standoff. And then I thought, well, wait a minute, I'm late to the airport. How am I going to get there? I live in a part of the city where cabs, it's harder to get. You know, it just didn't make sense. So I got in the car. And I will admit, I mean, it's embarrassing, but I will admit that I was hating him. And I looked at the back of his head and thought, I hate him.
Oh, okay.
I did. Yeah. I mean, and you could say I was annoyed or I was, you know, but it felt like hatred, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's the part that's embarrassing. Because you would think, you know, oh, I'm more evolved than that. But as my friends often will, some of my mentors and friends will look at me and smile and say, not Buddha yet. So there I am looking at the back of his head, and I can assure you that he was feeling similarly about me. And the atmosphere in the car was not very pleasant.
Uh-huh. So, that's a long ride, too.
Yeah, and that's when my awakened wise self spoke up to me in my ear and said, ask him if he wants to start over.
Oh.
So I said, you know what? Could we start over? I said, what's your name? And he said, my name's Bill. And I said, well, my name's Susan, and I just want to acknowledge that I was very crabby when I first saw you because I had slipped and fallen in cat poop, and I was also upset that you were late. And I just want to acknowledge that. And he said, well, thank you so much, and I just want to acknowledge that I was actually waiting on time 10 minutes early at the wrong address that my dispatcher had given me.
Oh.
And I said, oh, gosh, Bill, I said, do you want to forgive each other?
Oh.
And he said, yes. I said, me too. And we started laughing, and by the end, we were crying and hugging, and he'd given me his home phone number.
Oh, my gosh, how great.
And I'll tell you, that's an example of awakened wise self helping transform energy and change circumstances. And I have countless stories like this, and many of them are in the book, and I have new, fresh ones that are happening. And so I'm so happy to share that people, everybody can do this, and we can all assist each other because, you know, at any given time, one of us might be hating someone else, and we can we can offer our viewpoint. And
you had
another.
No, go ahead. You had mentioned there was a three-part harmony.
Yeah, and I'm not. It's all in the book, but I'll just tell you, it's just simple. It involves writing down. You can do it in as little as 5 minutes. The whole thing takes 15 to 20 minutes. And it's really a simple way to change and stop the negative self-talk. And it's powerful because a lot of people are so consumed with the negative self-talk that they're not even getting to the good stuff. And there's so much good stuff, isn't there?
Definitely. I mean,
so, you know, I find this all the time. I recently bought a new car, and I'd had a Mazda for 17 years. So it was, I had not been at a DMV in all that time. So I was suddenly at the DMV, and, you know, I didn't know what goes on. I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and I thought, oh, dear, this is not good energy. Like, these are really, everybody is very unhappy, and nobody's communicating with each other, and we're all just sitting in these folding chairs with our little papers. And so I was moved to do something that I didn't plan on. I had to close my eyes to do it. I stood up, and I just stood up where I was sitting, you know, from the chair I was sitting in, and just said, Amazing Grace. And I went on to sing the whole first verse of Amazing Grace, and nobody joined in. And by the second verse, about half the people were singing with me. And by the end of the third verse, the entire DMV was singing, including the people behind the bulletproof glass.
Oh, my goodness.
And if you want, and then I put more stories of what happened at the DMV with other people. People have been joking now that I need to just go set up a station at the DMV.
Oh, and, yeah, I'm about to do that whole DMV thing too as well. That's, yeah, it's a long line. It's a long day.
Right. And then I found myself there, you know, the following week for something else. And here was a young woman crying, clutching these papers, and she said, I just got a ticket for being in the bus zone, and it was $275, and I didn't even get out of my car, and they caught me on a camera, and I don't have the money. Oh. She said, and my car is parked at a meter that's about to expire, and I'm going to be late to work, and I don't know what to do. And I said, well, let's transform it. And
wow.
She said, well, how? I said, well, number one, I will go and put money in your meter so that you don't run out. And she said, but it's 12 blocks away.
Oh.
And I said, well, she was in tears. And she said, it's 12 blocks away. And I said, well, that's good because I love walking. And she said, but I don't have any quarters. And I said, well, that's good, too, because I have lots of quarters. And she said, but why would you do this? And I said, oh, there's a condition. And she said, what is it? And I said, that you tell this story and not the story of the $275 ticket in the bus zone. And she said, I can do that.
Oh.
So I hiked those 12 blocks, and I put the money in the meter, and I left her a reminder note. You are a transformational change agent. Pass it on.
Ah. Oh.
So that's what I'm saying to everyone on this call.
So, yes, and other than being a little DMV guru, you have a lot of things to teach. I mean, there's through Sark's book, she has, I mean, through basically you teach through story, which is what you're doing right now, which is so great. But you have gone through a lot of grief in the last year with your, I believe, your parents passed, your most wonderful, amazing Jupiter kitty passed.
Yes, and a fabulous love relationship ended. Absolutely. And that's the other reason I wrote this book, because I wanted people to witness my experience and witness the transformation and alchemy that I'm doing, and invite them to do it also. And let's make sure we let people know about the Celebrate Your Life event.
Yes. Yes, that is happening on next weekend, November 5th through 8th, and it's in Phoenix, and it's an amazing, amazing event.
It's my favorite speaking event I do. I mean, it's all of my favorite authors all in one place, all of everyone. I mean, Byron Katie, Wayne Dyer, Carolyn Mace, Alan Cohen. I mean, you could just go on and on.
Doreen Virtue, Greg
yep.
Braden. I mean, yeah, Michael Tamora, who's my wonderful mentor.
Oh, I love him so much.
He's the best.
Yeah, and I mean, and the Mishka Productions, this is, you know, Liz Dawn and her sister Jamie and Jane. Oh, they're all so, I mean, if every conference could be run like this, I mean, you come, the attention to detail, the level of organization, and the care for all the people attending, it is absolutely transformational.
And they have been so, so nice with us and letting us know about everything. They've actually donated tickets. And I think, how many tickets do we have? Two pairs of tickets. And if you guys call the station here, 818-985-5735, we have two pairs of tickets to this event. It's in Phoenix, Arizona, November 5th through 8th. And the guests are Sark, Wayne Dyer, Glynis McCants, the numbers lady, Doreen Virtue with the Angels, Reverend Michael Beckwith will be there, Byron
yes.
Katie, who I spoke with yesterday, who's just amazing.
Oh, I know. Don't you just adore her?
Oh, man. The rubber hits the road with that woman. She's,
yep.
I love her example of living with zero regrets. Greg Braden's going to be there, Michael Tamora, just an amazing event happening November 5th through 8th in Phoenix.
Oh, and the music of Karen Drucker, if you know KarenDrucker.com, oh my gosh, I mean, one of the best New Thought musicians on our planet.
And you guys, I mean, you might just have a great time hanging out together, just the
well,
speakers.
Well, they do a wonderful thing. They really have an author dinner where we all spend time together, and that's another great thing because we all communicate how to do things even better, how to give more value and more. So it's one of the reasons, I think, one of the many reasons the conference is so powerful. And I get to do an all-day workshop on Monday. They call it a post-conference. It's like, I think it's like 11 to 4, or wow. 9 to 4 maybe. I think it's all day, so it's 9 to 4. I'm glad no matter. So all the things I've just been sharing and, the stories I'll be teaching from that, it's 9 to 4 on Monday the 8th.
Wow.
Glad no matter what. Transforming what hurts into what helps. And
nice.
Yeah, and so it's going to be wonderful because I'm going to be really showing people how to do these practices. And we'll be doing the three-part harmony, and we'll be mentoring each other. They'll be learning how to support themselves and how to educate others how to support them.
Well,
it's powerful.
It sounds incredible. And so if you guys want to look up, it's celebrateyourlife.com, by the way. That's the website.
It's actually .org, and then it'll take you right to something called Mishka Productions. But if you put celebrateyourlife.org, you will find it there. And it's also being held at this hotel called the Desert Ridge that has, I don't know how many miles of swimming pool inner tube trails.
Ooh.
So you can just sit in an inner tube and float for miles through the grounds.
Oh, my gosh. How fun.
Oh, I'm telling you. And we're going to do a treasure hunt. We're going to hide copies of Glad No Matter What with little notes. And I'm doing two workshops, one on Saturday and one on Sunday, and we're having solution stations. So we're having where people bring their real life circumstances and we on the spot help them transform them.
Oh my goodness. Oh, how cool.
Yeah, I can't rave enough. I mean, I'm obviously raving. But
yeah, no, but this is good. And
I know.
Are you going to do the Glad game?
Oh, we're going to be playing the Glad game. So part of the, you know, let's tell everyone now, you can play the Glad game right now, which is something that you find challenging or difficult in your life and then something that you're glad about that very difficulty. So I'll give an example. I just had a challenge and a difficulty in that I was audited by the IRS.
Yes, that's difficult. Okay.
Yes. And I'm so glad to tell you that I experienced a magical IRS audit.
Really?
Yes. And I did
those two words don't usually go together.
No. In fact, someone told me it was tantamount to military intelligence.
Yes, it's an oxymoron, magical IRS. But anyway, but no, I mean, I've heard my husband had one of those really amazing experiences. So tell me, what happened?
Well, I just had, you know, I used my micro-movement wheel process, which I'll also be teaching at Celebrate Your Life, which is a way to do a lot more with, you know, with a lot less work. So it's the method I invented 25 years ago to be the prolific artist and author and business owner that I am. And so it's a primary process that I teach, and it's really fun and easy, and it's actually called the Micro-Movement Wheel of Delight. So you can make preparing for an audit as pleasurable and satisfying as planning for a vacation.
Well, what did you do?
Well, I made a series of micro-movement wheels. Micro-movements are 5 minutes in length or less. It's like an ignition system. And so you put a series of steps. You put something in the center. So my center in the wheel said magical IRS experience, magical IRS audit experience. And then the first thing was to transform the energy of the IRS agent.
Mm.
Because I knew that I wanted her, I knew it was a her because I had called, and I wanted her on my side. So I actually asked my wise self to speak to her wise self.
Oh.
And when I arrived at the audit, I saw her wise self behind her jumping up and down saying, I like her, I like her.
Oh. So you were able to look for the possibilities the minute you got there.
Yes. And many, many other steps. But I want to say that the reason the micro-movement wheel method works so well is it's made to fit in with an actual life. So it's not a motivational system, which is something from the outside where you change. It's an inspirational system, so it comes from the inside out.
And it seems like it's taking little steps at a time.
It's taking tiny little steps, which is the whole secret to it, but then it also shows you how to keep taking the tiny little steps. So 60% of the time, my 20-plus years of research show, we always keep going. 60% of the time, we will keep going long beyond the 5 minutes. It's the starting that we all dread. And 40% of the time, obviously, we won't. But the difference is you've written it down, you've made a micro movement, so your brain is saying, aha, she's underway with her IRS audit preparations. Most of us use our minds as a filing cabinet, and we stuff a lot of things up there. I've got to get ready for that audit. Oh, my God, I've got to get ready for that audit. And we repeat negative self-talk over and over and torture ourselves. And so this is a whole process and way to get you to really show you how only not to do that, but how much happier and more successful you'll be
if you can take the little steps.
Well, you'll be absolutely supported in taking the little steps, and you'll get such immediate satisfaction. Like you'll have such immediate experiences of it working that you're just going to naturally keep doing it.
Well, I mean, that's the type of thing that I appreciate. This book, this Glad No Matter Book, What book, has a lot of these types of techniques in it, little games or things to say to people who have had a loss, things not to say to people who have had a loss.
Yes, I liked that part.
That was really great.
Let's have the first one on things not to say. No thing. Nothing. Don't say nothing to someone who's had a loss.
Say something?
Yes, anything. Well, anything except none of the things that not
except
like they're in a better place. Don't say that.
Because I mean, honestly, when you have someone who has passed, or you know, I was talking with Byron Katie about this yesterday, about the loss of a child, and just her ability to reframe that, I still couldn't wrap my mind around, because I just can't see how to bounce back from something like that so fast, even though she doesn't recommend bouncing back. I mean, she has a great perspective on it.
Yeah, we're not meant to bounce. We're meant to weave.
Yeah, and what I mean, seeing here is that place in the middle is its little teeny steps, and that was what Katie was saying, now that I'm recalling, because my level of resistance to her. What she was saying, I'm like,
well, yeah, and good for you for mentioning resistance, because most of us are master, myself included, master resistors.
Oh yeah, the minute I started thinking about it, I'm like, if I think about this, I'm going to attract it. Stop thinking about it. Stop thinking about it. Stop thinking about it.
Right, and then of course it just gets louder because
yeah,
I know.
And so she was, so I'm brushing my teeth today, and I managed to have a little relief from my grief as I was brushing the back of my teeth. So just to be in that moment of the teeth brushing, and that's as much as you can do that day, then that's as much as you can do that day.
And that can be a lot.
Yeah.
And I want to share with people too that, you know, remember I talked about the selves. If you're not aware of this, you know, recently I was at a retreat center, and very unwillingly realized, oh no, here's sadness and loneliness. Mm. Like, why did this show up now? Why did this part? Like, everyone's enjoying, we're all having dinner. Why am I now sad and lonely? Like, I don't have time for sad and lonely, and I did not order this.
So yeah. What did you do to him?
Well, my first impulse was to eat a lot of brownies, which were there. And then I realized, well, I've learned that doesn't really work. I mean, it works in the short term, but then it's pretty bad.
Past experience.
And my second impulse was to drink some red wine, which I knew in a good mood, red wine is great. In a sad mood, red wine is not.
Wise move, yes.
And so I tried something new, which was, and I want to offer it to everyone listening because it's powerful. I asked the sad part to sit with me on the lawn. And I found two chairs together, and I said, would you do me the honor of joining me? And then I sat down, and I waited for the sad part. And I swear to you, I saw the outline of a body sit down.
Huh.
And I reached out my hand, and I said, would you hold my hand? And I felt a hand in mine.
Oh, wow.
And I could cry just talking about it because it was so powerful. And in that 10 minutes or so, I felt the sad part shift and soften and dissolve.
By being recognized and heard?
By being recognized and by being loved.
Mm.
Because, you see, I was very unloving. As soon as it showed up, oh, no, not that. You know, that's what we usually do. We're in resistance.
Yes.
And the resistance is what creates the suffering, not the thing itself. It's the resistance. The sadness or the loneliness was not causing me the suffering. It was my resistance to it.
You know, at that same women's conference, I heard Tony Robbins talk, and he was talking about the death of his father. And he said, I was under the illusion that he was going to live forever.
Oh, yes.
I thought that was very interesting.
Oh, yes. I mean, I think I'm under the illusion that I'm going to live forever.
You could apply that to anything.
Yes.
I mean, I'm under the illusion that my daughter's going to live forever. I'm under the illusion that my husband's going to live forever.
Well, of course they are, but, you know.
It's an illusion. We all have a cycle. And the memories and their love will live forever in my mind. And it isn't something that you just get over very fast because that's the whole point, is you create these memories so that they can live forever in your mind and you cherish and value. And that's, I think, one of the things that I've gotten out of it is to love the moments. Everyone always tells you when you have a child, they grow up so fast. They grow. And I have been hearing that since before I gave birth. And I've taken it as a clue. If everybody says they grow up so fast, I need to look at the little teeny gems in the little teeny moments and expand those as much as my working mom self can so that I don't think I missed it all.
Exactly. My brother Andrew, who is very dear to me, he was born when I was 11 and really came into our family like an angel. And we're very close, and we have a friendship in addition to a sibling relationship. And he says to me, Susan, you have a bouillon cube lifestyle. He said, you take the tiniest thing and you make a giant pot of soup out of it.
Wow, your little brother said that to you?
Mm-hmm.
How cool.
Yeah, he's referenced a lot in my books because he's very wise and he's very quotable and he does all kinds of wonderful things. He says, the world cannot be a bad place if we have such things as hippos and blimps.
He is very quotable. That's a funny thing to say about a brother.
I know, and actually he's been such a wonderful mentor and a guiding light to me. When he started attending my book events, you know, he's prematurely gray and is balding, so he actually looks older than me. And so many people thought, this is the brother that
knew her. Yes.
And so we had a t-shirt made that said, I'm not that brother.
Oh, God. But by the way, you have a relationship with your brother now that is a positive one, yes?
No. My older brother is, and anyone that cares to send energy or love his way, is a homeless alcoholic drug addict living by a lake in Minnesota.
Oh.
And we tried everything, our family. We totaled up that we'd spent $500,000 on treatment centers for him.
On intervention.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so now we send him a small amount of money and we pray.
Okay. And in your passing of your parents, was he there and aware of all of that?
Well, you know, I'm very psychic and intuitive and clairvoyant. I always have been, and I've recently started making that known because, you know, it was so natural to me that I didn't see any reason to talk about it. And now I understand that other people are wanting to know how to do it and, you know, how to practice it themselves. And so my younger brother and I were at my mother's house when she was in one of her many, she was in a dying process for about 3 years. And I said, you know, it's time to call him. And my younger brother said, well, how are we going to reach him? And I said, we just put it out into the air.
Mm.
You know, and my younger brother, very logical, very against anything like this, said, well, yeah, like that's going to work. And I wasn't surprised that later that night, after not speaking to my older brother for 7 years, the phone rang at my mother's house, and it was him.
Oh, my goodness. And what did your younger brother do?
He said it was just a coincidence.
Yeah. Wow. It is. That is.
I didn't care. You know, I mean, I don't need to prove it to him. It's very funny to me. But so he came, and I said, you better come and see her because it may be your last chance. And I'm glad I did that because he did get to see her before she died. And she had left a provision in her will that he get treatment again. You know, so we went through that whole process. And after we'd gotten him all set up with the apartment and he'd gone through a whole, you know, a very extensive detox with vitamins and everything. We got him all set up, and he had a car and a therapist and a telephone, and he had sold it all within weeks and moved into a crack house.
Oh, okay. So that's his choice at this time, yes.
Yes.
But you have a lot of, I mean, that experience in your life, just that still, many people, you are speaking for many people who have that same type of relationship, and many others don't know and take that as something that is a huge thorn in their side, where you can offer some suggestions about this. I mean, there's even I love the part of your book that says, welcome to the Dead Parents Club.
Well, right. And then when I wrote the chapter called What's Good When Your Parents Die, you know,
what's
and
so good
one
about
of the things,
this, right?
You know, they can't do any more new dysfunctional things. They can do old ones, but they can't do any new ones.
A lot of people are experiencing that you, as parents are growing older and so forth in this generation, that is something that a lot of people have to deal with right now. So you offer solutions in a playful way, in a colorful way, I should say. And it's helpful to a lot of people. So I definitely recommend, if you can, get yourself out to Phoenix, Arizona. And Sark's going to be speaking all day on Monday, the 8th of November, and then prior to that, the 5th, 6th, 7th, is guests Wayne Dyer, Glynis McCants, Doreen Virtue, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Byron Katie, Greg Braden, Michael Tamora, an amazing lineup of people.
Well, and Lisa, I want to make sure that people hear that I'm also speaking Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, great.
So I'll be Saturday the 6th from 10:30 to noon and Sunday the 7th from 1:30 to 3. So I'll be doing the solution stations, the glad no matter what, bring your real life circumstances, and I'll help you transform them on the spot.
My goodness. Well, I just so, you know, I even have one of your nap blankets. I have one of them, and I just remember it says the give yourself permission to nap, and it's a blanket, and I just love that blanket.
Oh, I know, and have you heard me say every time the more naps you take, the more money you'll make?
Oh, yes, I do remember hearing that, yes.
Yeah. Let's make sure we tell people to, of course, also find me at planetsark.com.
Yes.
And if you want to speak to me personally, you can call my inspiration phone line. Have you called that, Lisa?
You know what? I was going to call it before the show. I have it written down here for calling.
It's
no.
415-546-3742. Mm-hmm. And once again, 415-546-3742. If you like words, it's 415-546-EPIC, E-P-I-C.
Okay.
And I've had it for 16 years. It's free, and about 10,000 people a month call from all over the world. And I leave a message, and I sing, I write, read poetry, I talk about what's difficult and good, and I listen to messages from all over the world, and I absolutely love it.
Wow. And how often do you change that?
I change it as the spirit moves me, which is sometimes monthly, sometimes every 2 to 3 months. It depends. I'm about to change it again, so if you call soon, you'll get the current message that's on there, and then you'll get a new one that I'm doing.
Oh, very good. So it's 415-546 EPIC, E-P-I-C, and I've followed you for probably a good 15 years, Sark, and it's...
Thank you, Lisa.
Yes, absolutely. I'm a huge fan, and it's such an honor to talk to you in person and to laugh with you on the air, and it's just been a pleasure to, gosh, just spend an hour with you. It's just been awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, I've been so inspired, too. You know, you're so uplifting, and what a treasure soul you are, you know, reading, and I'm just, I love your show, and I love what you're doing and who you are.
Wow, gosh, coming from you, that's huge. And from everyone else, too, but thank you, Sark. Gosh, well, you just made my day.
Oh, thank you for making so many people's days and nights.
Oh, you too, you too. All right, well, just be well, and thank you so much again. And go to planetsark.com, and you can see all of what I'm talking about, because it's definitely worth looking at the color and the artwork that Sark produces. It's beautiful. God bless you, my love.
You, darling.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. And don't forget to check out the Celebrate Your Life Conference, Phoenix, Arizona, November 5th through 8th at celebrateyourlife.org. This is Lisa Garr. Thank you so much to my producers that make all of this happen, Tanya and Gina, and the wonderful engineers at KPFK. Give me your name, lady. Tamika, thank you so much. I'm like over my head right here. And this is Lisa Garr. Until next time, I invite you all to stay aware.